I'm Dr. Jaspal Singh. It's a pleasure to meet everybody. Basically, I'm a pulmonologist and interventional pulmonologist at Carolinas Medical Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, part of Advocate Health and Levine Cancer Institute. And I helped with this paper, basically, trying to help in the pulmonary perspective of understanding lung biopsies and molecular testing.
Awesome. And I was wondering, before we get into the specific details, if you could go into just a little more about this white paper that we're discussing today.
So the white paper was part of a group that sort of got together to think about, are we why are we not optimizing molecular testing? Why are there still many patients actually that go through biopsies or go through treatment options for their newly diagnosed cancers? And we focus mainly on lung and bladder cancers, genitourinary cancers, because they have some important biology elements in terms of trying to get biopsies from what we call small biopsies, optimizing molecular testing, and especially since the treatment of these tumors actually can be incredibly powerful when we combine molecular testing with the newer treatment options. And so, but what's happened is there's a gap existing between the availability of testing, the execution of testing, and what the implications of the science might be. This is why the white paper kind of came together. And so the team assembled a multidisciplinary group of experts, a panel of experts, and really kind of started to drill down and understand the reasons for this gap. Why are patients who are eligible for molecular testing in these types of tumors, where we have newer therapies, advanced therapies that have real important advantages, and still we're not able to close that gap? So what can we do to help close that gap?
So that leads me right in the next question, pretty obvious one. What can we do?
So we kind of drilled it down to a bunch of different options, actually, and particularly looking at every step from who you involve in the beginning to how quickly you do testing to what type of testing we do on every specimen. So just to kind of step back a little bit, a lot of these tissues, these tissue biopsies are performed on small bits of tissue, and so you have to be basically what we call process the specimen optimally, manage it well, and then also be able to steward what we call provide proper stewardship and processing. Then we also have to even let's step back upstream a little bit and actually think about why are people not even sometimes even thinking about the biopsies? Well, they may be that they're not thinking about it or they're not ordering it because of pragmatic issues. They may not realize that there's blood t that there's way to get blood tests, that if they can't get blood that if they can't get tissue, there might be some reason blood tests to do. I think there are some gaps in obtaining the blood test to actual understanding or even misperceptions about how to interpret those results in light of the patient's illness. So I think there's a lot of opportunities here in terms of education, specimen acquisition, optimizing the testing process, handling the specimens overall, and trying to coordinate that amongst a very complex dynamic where, when we step back, patients and their are oftentimes scared, right? They're oftentimes scared about, they have this diagnosis that might be looming, and they're like, well, let me get started on treatment right away. And they kind of sometimes I think we all tend to sort of s not step back and think, okay, like how do we get the most precise therapy started from the beginning, from the get-go? And that's where I think we're trying to move the field. And that has not been something we historically have done for some of these cancers. And so changing that mindset, changing that overall approach has been it's going to take some time. It's going to take some education. So this is where our team kind of had to sort of sit back and a little bit and think about how to do that better.
And obviously, you can get into more detail about the specific numbers. One thing that stood out to me was that there were variations in the like percentages of people that got these testings that changed from cancer to cancer. So, what was it about like non-small cell lung cancer that had a higher percentage as opposed to like bladder cancer or prostate cancer?
Well, non-small cell lung cancer, there's it's been I'm not saying I'm not sure. Let me ask that question again. I'm not sure there's a difference because I don't know enough about the genitourinary cancers. I mostly focus on the lung, so I don't want to sort of step outside my area of expertise. I will say that for lung cancer particularly, what we see is a very important cancer. Lung cancer still kills more people in this country, in the United States, than all the other cancers combined, men and women. And so when you step back and think about that number, you think of how deadly this disease can be, that how important it is to get that treatment upfront, precisely diagnosed and identified for any potential treatments early on, the better. So why is it important? Is because and I think that's what you kind of asked me, is sort of like, why are we focusing on this cancer particularly? It's one because it's oftentimes very aggressive, but more importantly, not found till late. When it's not found till late, then we have to really sort of be up against a little bit of time, but more importantly, look at treatment options that would really improve survival. And fortunately, we live in a time and era where actually there's more and more treatments every day being discovered that are much more precise and much more likely to provide very good outcomes.
And you touched on this before, that there might be some pragmatic issues. Are you finding that doctors might be holding off on ordering these tests early on because they're just trying to get someone on like treatment, and it's just whatever the most likely treatment is what they're going to diagnose first or prescribe first?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think part of it is just what we've always done. That's what people train to do, right? And that's kind of like, and to train how you do things differently today might just be really challenging to keep up with, because this is happening for every different type of cancer, right? For many cancers now, the treatments are very different than they were 10, 15 years ago. And so people are in the communities where they may not recognize all these advancements and keep up on top of them. And then on top of that, they understand the side effects or understand how to even administer some of these therapies. That can be sometimes daunting, which is why many centers have developed super specialized approaches. And if you're in the community, or even if you're in a specialized practice, actually, you'll see a high volume of patients. It can be very daunting to go through all of the logistical pathways and think through how to navigate this patient through that in a very informed, open, transparent process that promotes trust. And so sometimes I think there's a lot of human factors involved. Sometimes there are logistical factors involved. Sometimes the testing isn't easily obtainable for these people. And so thinking through the different steps, I think our team was able to identify through the white paper a little bit more, identify, where the gaps might be. But now that we know where they might be, we can actually take a team approach and be like, okay, let's identify them and let's adjust our strategy accordingly.
And did you find any barriers related to, pushback from like insurance coverage at all?
Yeah, we actually did. That's a great question. I think insurances are also, sometimes confused. They're like, well, you want a test here, then you want a test here. Are you really going to change treatment based on the test or not? Or are you going to go to a standard therapy anyways? And I think insurance companies and payers are trying to understand that dynamic a little bit as well. And I think sometimes it's confusing when there's not, maybe guidelines are saying one thing, but just like, we live in a technological age, right? So just giving a similar analogy, you might say like, you know what, I like this software or this, AI system today. Well, a year from now, if I tell you it's a different system's working and different things, insurance companies and Medicare and others may not be like able to kind of flex at quickly. And so I think they're just trying to understand this better. And I think we need more clinicians and advocates and everybody kind of coming to the table and saying, this is what we think today works well. And I think the more we do that, the more likely there's to be smoother transitions here.
And it sounds like a potential solution here is really kind of pushing to educate people about these treatments before they're even getting sick, so that when they do get sick and they're dealing with everything, they kind of have it built in them to know to ask for these tests. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think education is a big part of it. And I think that's a huge part from both. And I think you identified it very well. Like, it's not just the clinicians, but it's also the patients, right? How do we put that information in a way that's also not scary, intimidating, and more empowering, right? So that patients be like, oh, you know what? Am I eligible for this treatment? Would this make a difference or not? Or would this slow things down? Or how does that look? And so I think education on all ends can be quite helpful. And I think that's part of the picture. But I think what we're kind of hoping for more is not just education, but also more of a clarity, maybe pathways, maybe more like, this is kind of our standard now today. And I think we're kind of moving towards that area. And our paper sort of identified the idea of what we call reflex testing, the idea that if you have someone that you think is, not just a simple tiny lung nodule for lung cancer, or in those situations where You might think of a systemic therapy that if, when you're thinking about a systemic therapy, something like chemotherapy or immunotherapy or those types of agents, that actually upfront we get that information upfront. And that may include tissue, that may include a blood test, may include some combination thereof. But I think we're moving as a scientific field towards more broad molecular testing upfront. And that's as the science is advancing, we're learning more about this, that things aren't that simple oftentimes with cancer. Cancer is a very dynamic process. It behaves, it's got a very nuanced approach, and we have to be prepared for a nuanced approach. So the more we think about that upfront, I think the better.
Awesome. So that covers all the questions I had. Was there anything you'd like to add?
No, I would just say that, this is a time of great hope, that actually, we have some really neat and impressive therapies. And I think when my patients Google, they might have lung cancer, they go to the internet and they start to think, oh my gosh, I have this, I have this. And I think what may not come through sometimes from what I'm seeing at least is that patients don't realize that there's all these interesting therapies, new therapies that provide a lot better hope and a lot more survival and some great outcomes. And I have many patients that I've known for many years, that, this it's just a testament to the technology advancing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for the time.